You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday. What month is it? It's August.
Is it still August?
It's August 24th, 2015. Listening to episode 169. My name is Rob. That's Jason.
Hey.
Hey.
I'm just sitting here looking at Pretense. Game of the year for the Philly Geek Awards.
Yeah.
So true story. Yeah.
That's cool. Congratulations.
Yeah.
To those guys. To that guy, rather.
It wasn't actually planned. It was just sitting there on my table
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
As it usually is.
Every week, sitting right here. Yeah.
Next to all those empty beer bottles.
So many.
I keep planning on getting rid of them, and I just keep forgetting.
Whatever. When we were recording at my house, there were
yeah,
innumerable empty beer bottles and water bottles and your coffee cups and
yeah.
whatever. It's just it's a fact of Building the Game podcast.
Yes.
Is that wherever we're recording needs to be surrounded by the detritus of our consumption.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Good word.
Yeah. Both good words. Yeah. Detritus and consumption.
Consumption's not...
It's a good word. It's not an unusual
consumption,
word.
Consumption is a cooler word when you use it to mean
tuberculosis.
Yeah.
It's a little bit sad, though.
It is.
Yeah.
Got the consumption.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Better word? Vapors. Got the vapors.
Yeah,
got the not vapors. Not about tuberculosis. That's about farting.
What?
That's about farting when you have the vapors.
No.
Yeah, it means you're gassy.
No. It's not how I've always understood it.
What do you understand?
The vapors means, like, Southern women would, oh, I've got the vapors, they'd have to lay down, which actually probably meant they were taking opium to feel better, which made them need to lay down.
Well, the vapors, I think, means that you're having digestive issues.
I don't believe that at all.
Well,
listeners,
we could Wikipedia
settle
this.
That for this. I'm not going to, because
no.
we have a bunch of builders at our disposal.
Fact-checking ruins podcasts.
It does.
It's a fact.
Just ask any political podcast you've ever listened
there
to.
There you go.
If you haven't listened to political podcasts before, good for you, neither
yes.
have I.
Congratulations.
I'm just assuming.
You're doing it right.
But anyways, so yeah, let's think about this here. Yeah, the vapors, you're wrong, but that's okay. A builder will probably tell us, my likely guess is that we're both wrong, and then it
in
means
some
something
way.
Completely
I'm
different.
Sure. Or no one cares. Also a real possibility.
Also a very possibility.
Yeah.
I already turned the show off. Go ahead.
So how long have you been recording here at your house now?
It's
been a year now?
It's been at least a year, because I've lived here for more than a year, and we started pretty quickly
pretty
after
soon
I
after
moved
you moved.
In,
yeah. Right. So, yeah, so about a year now. It feels like for almost that entire time, there's a section of road that has been under construction. And that's the bridge, Sprinkle Road Bridge over 94.
Oh, yeah, it's been that long. Yeah,
a long time. Yeah, and it sucks.
Because now we actually might use that bridge because we live off Sprinkle Road.
Yeah. So, and I've been, that's how I get from my house to your house, because there's no good straight line to get there. Anyway, so it's been under construction and it's been an awful mess. For the first time today, they've opened part of the new bridge.
Oh.
And as it turns out, they're installing roundabouts instead of stoplights.
Really?
I can't tell you how happy that makes me.
See, it makes me happy, except for this. And listen, if you're from Kalamazoo and you live near there, I'm sorry. But I feel like that part of town right there, that little section there uh-huh. where that Denny's is and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't feel like the people that live there are going to deal with roundabouts.
Well, you know what?
Over there on Millom, where the uh-huh. Fancy Pants people live by Texas Corners, that's where you put in roundabouts.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know what? Hey, the growing pains. Everyone's got to learn something.
Just saying.
I haven't.
Those are the people living there, not any certain type of people or anything. I'm just like, I think of like.
I get you.
Like Denny's, right? And I think that the main clientele of Denny's, not a fan of roundabouts. They're going to say, America is not about roundabouts. And I'm sorry if I offended people that go to Denny's. I like Denny's. But if you are there all the time, if mm-hmm. you live there, it's possible. It's just possible that maybe you hate roundabouts and say America.
I'm just saying that I've been to Europe enough times now to know that roundabouts are the thing, man.
Oh, they're great.
They're so great.
That one over on the Fancy Pants side of town is so great.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Oh, man, roundabouts. So whoever is in charge of road planning or whatever in Kalamazoo County is making good decisions. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, slow decisions.
Slow, but good decisions. Gradual decisions, but they're making the right ones.
I'm going to get hate mail now because I said certain people don't understand roundabouts.
Yeah.
And they go to Denny's.
You're talking about rednecks. You're talking about rednecks and drunk college kids. That's what you're talking about.
You know what? Yeah. You don't listen to our podcast. If you're a redneck or a drunk college kid who listens to our podcast, let me know.
Yeah.
Chevy Dodd, you do not count as a redneck. You're a mountain man. So if you're listening, don't take offense. I also feel like he wouldn't be caught dead in a Denny's, but
I don't think. Oh, I don't know. Hey, Chevy's an enigma.
His hat would not fly at the Denny's.
I think it would do real well there.
If he was a high school kid.
Well,
I had friends in high school that wore hats like that.
Did you?
Yeah.
That's too bad.
They couldn't pull it off like Chevy can. They were not nearly as tall.
Yeah.
So,
right. Yeah. They didn't have that swagger.
Right.
That Chevy has.
The Chevy Dodge.
Chevy doesn't listen to this either.
He does, though.
What?
He listens to our podcast. Yeah.
Anyway.
So, you know what's funny?
What's funny? Your face?
Do you know? Thanks. Do you know how to make Matt Riddle dance like a puppet?
No, how do you make Matt Riddle dance like
Matt
a puppet?
We just say Matt Riddle's kind of dumb. Matt Riddle's got some bad ideas. Now, when I said that, here's what just happened.
Uh-huh.
Ben Pinchback just sent him a message and said, Matt, they're talking about you in this podcast. You should go listen. So, Matt, suck it. You're listening to our podcast now, even though you don't want to. So, deal with that.
That's entertaining. Yeah. You know what else is funny about what you just said there? Matt now has another way that he could potentially listen to our podcast, because now we're on Stitcher.
Oh, it's true. We're on Stitcher.
Yeah. It's about time you got around to that.
Did you like my tweet about that?
That was
pretty clear about how I felt about it.
Yeah.
So it turns out they've streamlined their process big time. It took less than a day to get approved. I can use the same feed that I use for iTunes.
Even better.
It used to require some different settings, but PowerPress has that figured out. And if you're into podcasting and WordPress, PowerPress is your best friend ever. It's free. It's amazing. Yeah. It's got really good stats. And if you want to pay, you can get insanely good stats. But really, the stats they provide you are good enough for sure.
Great.
So
cool.
Yeah. So that's a little plug for PowerPress. It's free. So, and they've helped us. And the guy in charge, I've emailed him multiple times and he's helped me out personally when I've had problems with this thing.
Cool.
So, and he like runs the company. So that guy is awesome.
Hands on dude.
Yeah. I think he was probably one of the original people who did the software.
Yeah.
And is now in charge of it. But
right on.
Good for that guy.
Yeah. That's cool. So yeah, so Stitcher, so basically, our buddy Linear Wexford has been nagging us for, I don't know, the better part of a year to get on Stitcher.
A long time.
At least since Grand Con last year.
Yeah, so we did it before Grand Con this year, so he can't harass us.
Right.
Though he harassed us at Gen Con, I think.
Right.
Yeah,
he even left us a voicemail complaining about it.
You know what made me mad, by the way, about that?
What?
The first thing I did when I got it on Stitcher was I tried to email Len.
Uh-huh.
Len has never emailed this before. He only has voicemails. I almost texted him. Even though he has no idea that I have his phone number, because I get your phone number when you call the Google Voice account.
Oh, right.
It lists it.
That's funny.
And I can tell you which one it is, because I know I still have voicemails out there from him from the last time we recorded. So I very much considered texting him, but I thought, I don't know. I would freak him out. He'd be like, what? I should have done it. It'd been funny. But
yeah. Speaking of Grand Con, oh man.
Grand Con, yeah, you are running out of time to get your contest entries.
That's right. We have our Grand Con, our hashtag BTG Grand contest. We need you guys to tweet a picture of yourself packed and ready to go to Grand Con. Tweet it using the hashtag BTG Grand. It'd be great if you could mention one of us or the podcast and Grand Con along with that tweet. Get that in by August 31st, and we'll pick one. Well, sorry, we won't pick. Mark and Brian of Grand Con will pick one winner. That winner will get 2 free badges and 2 free t-shirts.
Which is it's one of the better prizes we've ever given away.
It's an incredible prize, but you got to be able to make it to Grand Con in order to be eligible. Well, I mean, you can win, but if you're not going to come, then I guess we could mail you the t-shirts. But you want to go to Grand Con.
You really should
awesome.
Go to Grand Con. So
we
already have, I checked a while back, we had an entry already.
Good, good.
I haven't checked recently to see how many more we have, but we did have one and it was funny and it made me laugh.
Good.
So
get them in there. You have till the end of this month. You basically have 1 week left from today to get your entries in.
And it's not difficult, guys. Take a picture. Just take a selfie of yourself ready to go to Grand Con.
Didn't have to be anything fancy.
Make it funny. No, just make it funny and send it.
Grand Con is a gaming and comics convention in Grand Rapids, Michigan. This will be the third year in a row that they're doing it up there.
Yep.
We've had a blast the last 2 years and we're pumped about it again this year. So
many gaming luminaries will be there.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't know if that's true.
Like me?
Like you and Matt Riddle and Ben Pinchback.
Oh, yeah.
Matt Loomis, I'm sure, will be there.
Yeah.
Katarski will be there. Andy Lennox.
Very likely. I don't know that for sure, but
Andy Lennox and Guitarski, I'm like 99% sure. Guitarski will be there.
If we say it on the show, that means they have to go.
Right.
Because they're committed. Actually, we committed them.
I think Guitarski has a booth.
Oh, no way. Oh, good for him.
If that was a secret, Jason, I'm sorry, but I don't know why it would be. It's a freaking booth at a convention.
Maybe you should check with him before his posts.
He should be telling everyone that. Why would he not be telling people that? It's like free advertisement. I'm going to take a copy of your game when I see you, because that's what it costs for me to advertise that for you.
Well, you already have a copy.
Do advertisements. I do.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe I can get an advanced copy of Treehouse.
There you
that
go.
Game is awesome.
There you go. Yeah, and I totally forgot what I was about to say.
Probably wasn't important.
That. No, I thought it might have
been. You have till the end of August.
Yeah. Anyway, do that.
Do that. Also, really, really go to Grand Con. So I don't know who else is coming, though. I wish I did. I wish right off the top of my head I could tell you. I bet Joe Hopkins will be there.
Yep, that's where we first met him a couple of years ago. Yep.
So saw him again at Gen Con this year, and I think he said he'd be there. He doesn't live too far. I think he's from Detroit. So,
great. Yeah.
So any other game designers you missed, yell at us and then come.
Yeah.
So
what you been playing, huh?
Well, we played a game together recently with our friend Alan, who listens to the show and who we work with now. And Alan is an awesome dude who brought the game Evolution twice. He brought it the first time. We didn't have time to play it.
Right.
Brought it the second time. And boy, am I glad we decided to play it.
Yeah, that was fun.
You want to give a little description of how the game works?
Yeah, so the setup is that each player is trying to evolve a series of creatures from some kind of lower life form into a powerful member of the food chain, I guess, basically. And you start out basically with kind of a blank slate of a creature, and you have a little card where you can track the body size and the population size of your creature. And every turn, every round, you need to be able to eat enough food to feed your entire population. If you can't feed your entire population, then your population dies off to a point where
you can feed them.
Right. And then a part of that is giving each creature something. Just break there.
I'm sure it's
no
fine.
Screaming. It's fine.
My wife's up there. I'm sure it's fine.
So a part of that is also adding specific traits to your creatures. Each creature, I believe, can have up to three traits, and they might be things, they might be defense mechanisms, they might be ways to get additional food, they might be something like carnivore, and so if you make a carnivore, you can only eat other players' creatures instead of grazing from the food that's available.
Sounds cooler than it is.
Yeah, so that's a very, very simple introduction to the game. Mechanically, you're basically playing cards to add food to the supply and to add traits to your creatures. And different traits can kind of combine in different ways if you have multiple creatures. I think at the end of the game, I had five creatures. I had four, and Alan had five or six.
Yeah, you had more. I think you had five. I had four. Alan had like six.
Yeah.
It's one of those games where... Oh, so the scoring at the end is the amount of food you have, the population of your species, and a point for each species? Or no, that the population just handles that. Yeah, so...
Something like that.
And I won, and I won by a good deal, and I think it's because I dumb lucked into growing my population and feeding the crap out of them early game, and then you guys started doing that, but I was just too far ahead, and it wasn't like I was being strategic. I just was like, hey, I guess I'll try and eat some more food.
Yeah,
that's worth points or something, and then almost died a couple times because of it.
Yeah,
and got lucky.
It's one of those games where the second time you play, it's going to be very different from the first time you play.
Right.
So we were playing a three-player game. I had a ton of fun with it.
I did, too.
But by the end of the game, there was a lot to keep track of.
Too much to keep track of.
So that was my the criticism that we both had on the game. That, like, I think the game plays up to six, but I can't imagine playing a game with more than four.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, I have a hard enough time keeping track of all the different traits of all of my creatures,
right?
Much less thinking about what everyone else's creatures can do, and which ones might be able to eat me, and how much food they might be able to get.
And I think a slight criticism of the game, because that kind of is a criticism of the game.
Yeah.
I mean, it does not make the game unfun. The game is crazy fun, and I would love to play it again. I don't think I would buy it, only because the only group I can see myself playing with it is you and Alan, and like maybe your wife.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there's really no reason to buy it, because those are the people that I would play with anyways.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing that I don't remember what it was. The other thing I didn't like, there was something. Oh, it was, honestly, after a while, it mostly just felt like we were playing by ourselves.
Yeah, kind of that Dominion effect a little bit.
If you make your body size on your animals big enough, just big enough that the carnivores can't eat it, then you basically ignore the other players, except mm-hmm. for the fact there's food in the middle. So kind of the way to win the game is find ways to make sure you get the food. And that was what happened. I got a card called Body Fat, I think. And that card allowed me to store extra food. Mm-hmm. So when there was a lot of food out there, I would fill up on food. And then the next turn, I would automatically have food to eat. I think it's mm-hmm. called fat stores or something. But you guys would be hosed. So mm-hmm. you're losing creatures, and I'm like still getting a ton of food.
Yeah. Yeah. See, and one of the things about being a carnivore is that if you're a carnivore, you can only eat creatures the same body size as you or smaller.
Right.
Now, and I actually kind of have a problem with that, because there's a clear history of in nature of small creatures taking down larger creatures by hunting in packs.
Well, but to be fair, there's a pack hunting card that takes that into account.
Well, right. So, but
I'm just saying they do take that into account.
They do. I feel like if I have multiple carnivores, I should be able to add up all of my body sizes to equal that kind of thing.
But the idea is that they're not coordinating.
Right. Or my population size should be added to my body size automatically anyway.
Now that does feel fair, but I can see why it would be super powerful.
Yeah,
you know. So
well, I mean, then again, carnivores are carnivores. They're high up in the food chain, and I mean,
true, that's true.
I feel like they should be more powerful.
I think they wanted them to feel, because in real life, carnivores have a harder time maintaining than herbivores, just because they have to find a food that can run, whereas an herbivore just goes and eats food that's sitting there.
Right.
And I think they were trying to do that, and for the most part. Which we all thought this was cool, was you would ask a question like, can I do blah, blah, blah? And Alan said, most of the time, think about evolution and evolutionary biology, and that will actually answer your question.
Yeah.
Which was pretty cool. There's an instance where, you know, they specialized a little more than mm-hmm. nature would have. But I commended it for doing that, because it, like, whenever you, I know you feel the same way, whenever theme can rule mechanics.
Sure. Absolutely.
In a game like that that's super thematic, mm-hmm. it's very important. And so that was one of the things that I think really drew me to it. And I like creating, like, it was almost like a role-playing game where mm-hmm. you were leveling up your dudes.
Yeah,
you know?
And that was really cool. Yeah,
it was like if Munchkin was cool, it would be more like that.
I can see that actually the Munchkin comparison is pretty apt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the funny things that happens in the game, and this is not a bad thing about the game, it's just mm-hmm. a funny thing that happens in the game, and that is that when you have carnivores, you end up making species to eat.
Depending on what everyone else is doing, but the fact that you can do that is pretty cool.
Right, and so you might think, well, that's dumb. Why would you have to make species to feed your own? But here's kind of the bazinga on that is, you choose the order that your creatures get fed in. So as long as no one else is going to eat your creature, you can actually feed your herbivore mm-hmm. and then eat them and get two food out of the deal
right.
for spending 1 point to do that. And and that's really mm-hmm. cool. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, but it did have pretty compelling decisions. You know, all the cards in the game are trait cards. There's no other type of card in the game. And those are used to basically to give new powers to your creatures, and to add just generic food to the
right.
herb supply. And if you want to increase body size or population size, you also have to discard the same cards. And so pretty much in every turn, once you get, you know, a third of the way into the game, you have difficult decisions to make
about
what card you want to keep to try and use or what card you want to maybe hold to the next turn, or what you want to discard right now to get something done.
Right.
So, yeah, so good decision making in that.
It was interesting because, like, yeah, you'd find yourself like, well, this adds 7 food to the pile, and mm-hmm. I need more food, so even though I really want this trait, I'm going to have to put it out there, you know?
Right.
And you can be a jerk and add, like, minus food, mm-hmm. but we mostly all wanted more food, so...
Later in the game, though, we got a little stingy about it.
True, it was a little stingier.
Right. But yeah, it was good.
Very good game, definitely play it again, mm-hmm. Encourage some people to check it out. Evolution, I'm going to guess it's like a $50 game because of all the widgets.
Yeah, lots of chipboard stuff and fabric bags and that kind of stuff.
I mean, lots of chipboard stuff. Like, there was probably, I bet there's 200 food pieces, because in a three-player game, we used over 100.
Yeah.
So,
6-player, that could be,
Yeah,
but that was fun. I don't recall who the publisher is or the designer, so shame on us for not remembering that.
But whoever you are, you made a good game.
Yeah, it's good. And I've been spending so much time working on Sloom Tycoon. I have a deadline now from AJ to get it turned in, get the rules finalized and the final balance ready to go and final component list and card text and all that kind of stuff. So the deadline is fast approaching. So I've been spending a lot of my free time working on that.
Nice. Both of us have been spending free time working on secret games.
Yeah, that too.
That are going to a cool little thing.
Mm-hmm.
I say little, because not in a demeaning way, but I think it's pretty apt, right?
Yeah.
And people will understand once they get it. So we should both have games with that thing soon. And some people who are listening to this absolutely know what we're talking about already, because it's not that big of a secret, but it's never been publicly announced. And we're sure not going to be the first ones to do it. So
right. Yeah. On top of that, my wife and I are working together on another project that I'm probably not supposed to talk about.
Right.
So,
yeah.
And I think actually all of these things are due by September 15th.
That was probably your choice on some of those, though.
No,
the one is not due technically until September 30th. But if you're like me, you already submitted it and you're awesome and you don't have to do anything else.
Well,
you just have to wait for something to get published.
Yeah. So I've got a busy few weeks
here. Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
We both have a busy time getting ready for GrandCon, too.
Yeah, that's for sure.
We'll probably, on an upcoming episode here, we'll probably preview what we're doing to get ready for GrandCon, probably the week before GrandCon.
Sure.
Because that seems fitting, because we do that with Gen Con, and we have to prepare just as much, honestly, for GrandCon, with the exception of the Iron Design. Hey, by the way, the Iron Design stuff's on our website now, in case you haven't noticed. Go check it out. You can watch both years on there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's good. And we're going to hopefully put some pictures and stuff up at some point, but it's us, so it might take a while.
It's up to you, pal.
I don't have the trophy. I need somebody to take a sweet picture of the trophy.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, it's up to you, pal. Once you send me the picture and then I haven't posted it, then you can say it's up to me.
Okay.
That'll happen. Don't worry.
Do you
want
me to bring the trophy with me next time I come over here?
Why would I take a picture?
Because you're the guy who knows photographers.
I'm not a photographer. I'm not going to go to him and ask him to take a picture of
me. Why not? He's a cool guy.
Because that's weird.
I bet he would.
I bet he would too.
And then he would talk to you about politics for an hour.
It's true. So, yeah. So, anyways.
How about a feature of the week?
Hey, so I was thinking a lot about Saloon Tycoon lately. And so the topic came up. When do you realize the design is so terrible that you want to throw it away?
Thanks.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
No, actually, we've been talking about that with some other games.
Yeah, we have.
You and I have
actually
both
earlier today.
Yeah, you and I, and that's why when we were like, let's choose a topic for tonight, I was like, hey, I feel like this is a great topic.
Yeah.
So this is something every designer faces. When do you take a game and just say, this isn't worth salvaging? You know, first of all, let me say that my opinion is you should never actually throw a design away, because there's always a chance you can steal from it later. And that's very important to remember. Don't ever like destroy all your notes about something. Feel free to disassemble the prototype and not work on it, but keep those notes. Google Docs is great for that.
Card sleeves are expensive.
Well, I'm not saying throw away the card sleeves, you dummy.
Yeah, no, but I mean, pull it apart and reuse the pieces.
Yeah. I feel bad sometimes. Like, the beat on the street, I took apart that proto. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I like this game, but I'm not going to work on it because I don't want to right now.
Yeah. I realized I've sent so many protos out that I was running low on card sleeves and I had to go back to the game shop here and buy some more card sleeves. Yeah. I was like, dang, man, it's been a while since I bought these. Because I bought so many back when I did Frankenstein's Legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm...
Yeah, and I've always had them from my minis time. And I've bought new packs every once in a while. And I'm like, I really need a solid color of 60 of these. I'm just going to buy them.
Yeah.
The other thing I picked up lately at Gen Con was these deck boxes. And these are amazing. And
those fit card sleeves okay?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, what game is this? Oh, this is Mushi Mushi, which has actually got quite a few cards in it. So it's a 54-card game plus stuff. So... Whoa, that was loud. It's really loud.
Yeah, well, because we don't have shock mounts on these mics. Yeah. So it conducts all table shake right to our earphones.
That's awesome. I don't put my arms on the table. So
I appreciate that.
About that. So, all right. So when do you throw design away? You know, you and I, like, today, actually, both of us did a playtest that we recorded, and you guys can hear. And
we'll put that up later this week.
Yeah, the conversation we had at the beginning of the playtest was, if this doesn't go well, I'm just going to throw this away.
Yeah.
And you said the same about yours. And we were both actually pretty happy with how our playtest went. So that was exciting stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So so I guess we can talk about specifically in these two prototypes, we can say what brought us to that conclusion or to that decision today.
Right. So for mine, it was pretty simple. The reason I was considering getting rid of it is because There was always an optimal move, and the optimal move was very clear, right?
Yeah.
I understand that a lot of times in games, at any time during a game, there's generally an optimal move, right? But when there's a standard optimal move, which in this case, and I'm going to pitch this game later, and you'll understand, which in this case was always play the highest card that you have, no matter what. That's not good, right?
Right.
So the decision was, it's a pattern kind of building style area control game. So you play the highest thing, you move your piece around, you control as much area as possible, and boom, that's how you win the game. And you would just, and I thought that was fun because I like the movement, like the having to think about movement. And you were like, but I always play the highest card. And I said, well, that's true. And so, so you and I came up with some strategies to mitigate that. And hey, it turns out they worked. I still think there's a little bit more I could add to the game. I still I have two cards in my set that I could do something with, but then we also talked about some goal cards to try and make it better. But either way, it came to a point today where it was like, hey, interesting decisions were being made that didn't always involve play the highest card.
Right.
So for me, that was kind of, I guess, for me, if there's nothing else you can add to the game without there always being... this is what you always do to win the game. That to me is a design that's not worthwhile. Also, if it's not fun, let's just throw it away, right?
Yeah.
So what about you?
Yeah, well, so what I was testing was the Inexorable March to the Grave, and I think that was the third time we'd played it together.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the first two times, it was an activity, but not a game, right? I mean, there was some limited decision making, but
it felt like it didn't really matter.
Right.
It felt like if somebody made some good decisions early on, they were probably going to win the game, and there was nothing the other player could do about
it. And frankly, if one person was just luckier than the other, that could also offset all that, and there was nothing anybody could do to change that.
Right.
Right. So so that was a little disappointing. That was a little bit frustrating. So with this one today, I kind of said to myself, you know, if that feeling is still there, that I don't have any agency in what's going on in this game, then I'm wasting my time with it.
Exactly.
Yeah. And but one of the reasons that I could say that is because it's a real simple design. It's a real simple prototype.
Yep.
And I haven't put a lot of sweat into it. And so it was easy for me to say, you know, third try, and if it doesn't work, I'm done. I'll put aside. Cause I haven't put many, many hours into development and analysis and math and spreadsheeting it out and so on and so forth.
Right.
You know, but when it comes to a bigger project, maybe the decision's not that simple.
Yeah, right. I think with a bigger project, you have to lean really hard on playtesters to help know. You know, it's kind of the same question of how do I know when it's done, right? Like, how do I know when it's just done for? And I think going to playtesters you trust in saying, listen, you just be honest with me. And you and I are really good about that with each other.
Yeah.
And we're designers that are pretty honest with ourselves, I feel like. Like, there was another game I was working on, that train robbery game I have that I always really wanted to make work that has never worked. And I feel like this game probably isn't going to work. And so I took it to Matt Loomis because it was a memory math game, a deduction game. And I took it to him because he's really good at those games. And he can usually tell you if they're not fun because he just breaks the game by being able to memorize the cards and always know what the right choice is.
Yeah.
I took it to him and, he gave me some feedback and I said, just be brutally honest. Like, what do you think? And he said, I've seen your other stuff and it's better than this game. And I said, awesome. Great. Yeah. Thank you.
Sure.
It was so freeing. Cause it was like, throw that game away. You know, don't actually throw it away, kids. Keep the idea. You know, and so that was very, very helpful. So honest feedback from other people is important, but you have to know who you're asking, right? Because frankly, I could design a game that's super fun and I could have you play it and you might hate it because it's not your type of game.
Yeah.
So you really want to think a lot about, if I have a trick taking game, I cannot do better than Jason Kantarski. Chris Kopak would be a close second because he also loves the trick taking games. But I mean, you want to know the type of person you're going to ask.
Let me talk about Maelstrom for a minute.
Yeah. Oh,
Maelstrom was a game that I was pretty heavy on 2 years ago.
Yep. At Grand Con.
Yeah.
First Grand Con.
And I still really, really enjoyed that. I still really enjoy that game a lot. I think it's a good game.
It's an awesome game.
And I think it's a good design. And I think there are good decisions to make. It's the most successful worker placement game I've ever done. And I've been pretty pleased with that. the core mechanic of it, though, is the core mechanic is worker placement. So kind of the most obvious feature of it is the way the pirate ships move around the circular board and how they go in toward the center and out towards mm-hmm. the outside of the whirlpool. And also then had a feature where every so many turns, the whirlpool would get tighter and tighter and right. tighter, and you had less room to move to kind of keep pushing everyone towards the center. And I feel like it worked really well, but that movement mechanic was so different from anything any of the playtesters had ever played before that they had trouble. They had trouble getting into it. They had trouble understanding what they were going to do. They had trouble. There was nothing intuitive about it, I guess. And right. that was confusing and a little disorienting. And even though it felt obvious to me, I mean, that's an unfair judgment because I made it up.
Right.
And I'd played it dozens of times. So in the end, that was one I decided just to let go of because that movement was just confusing to somebody, and I wasn't confident that it was something that I could convey to someone with a rule book, you know?
Right.
If I'm standing in front of them pointing and showing how things move on the board right in front of them, that's one way to handle it. But if I just pass it off to somebody for blind playtesting, they weren't going to get it.
Right. See, and this is a great chance to disagree. I still think there's reason to work on that game. I still think the game is great. That said, in your defense, I played it a ton, so I completely understood. I was also there when you designed it.
Yeah.
But I still think, I don't know, put some freaking pictures and diagrams in the rule book. I think it's amazing. I think the game is so fun. But I also understand why you're like, I don't think so.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing to understand, too, is that it's okay to put a game away if you're just not inspired by it anymore, right?
Absolutely.
I think that's the biggest reason I put games away is mm-hmm. I can have a game where someone says, oh, yeah, this is... you know, this is really fun, but, mm-hmm. you know, good example, Transylvania Trading Company, right?
Yeah.
Several people have told me how much they loved playing that game, and I really enjoyed the game too, but, like, it had some things that didn't work as well as I wanted them to, and it just wasn't as exciting, and when I showed it to some publishers, the biggest feedback was, you have to slim it down. For the style of game, this is, you have to make it smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, made it less fun, and just mm-hmm. harder to design, and it just wasn't as interesting. Full disclosure, I played Vault Wars, an early Vault Wars of Jonathan Gilmore's mm-hmm. At Grand Con last year,
mm-hmm.
And was like, wow, this has some of the same auction mechanic stuff as, like, even the theme was even semi, you know what I mean? Like, because mine was like a fantasy Transylvania theme, right. and his is like a straight up fantasy theme. They're clearly different games, but like, it was enough to where I was like, so there's something out there that I think is already doing what I'm trying to do better.
Yeah.
And the other pieces of the game don't add as much because everyone's favorite part of the game was the auction.
Yeah.
And he found a way to make it a little bit better. And I was like, I'm done with this. There's no reason to, maybe I'll use that theme on something else again. Cause that's the thing. People really, really like the theme on that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Surprise werewolf, man.
Sure. You know,
surprise werewolf.
There's right? the worst kind of werewolf.
So they are.
A surprise one.
You know, I mean, werewolves bad in general, but when you open a box and there's a werewolf inside.
And you weren't expecting there to be a werewolf inside.
Your day does not get much worse than that day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Right.
You know?
Right. And he's like, hey guys, I'm a werewolf. Rawr.
Yeah. And he's like, rawr. You know, that is terrifying. So, mm-hmm. So anyways, that's Bad News Bears or Bad News Werewolves as it is.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. Okay. So let's do a little recapping here to see what we've hit so far and see what else we can add.
Okay.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
So we've said, if you're not inspired by the game anymore, at least put it down. Maybe don't chuck it, but put it down.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't find the fun in the game, I think that's mm-hmm. a safe one to say.
Mm-hmm.
If the decisions are so simple that it's not going to work. Though in that case, think, maybe, could this be a kid's game? Because I would say always having an optimal decision in a kid's game is not a bad thing. Because it allows them to, you know, for instance, find my that. Cube game, they would always know playing the highest card was best, but them trying to figure out the pattern in which to move to be mm-hmm. better would be difficult.
Sure.
So that's good. What else do we have?
If your core mechanic or your core feature is potentially difficult to get into.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Or difficult. So difficult to explain in a rules setting, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, frankly, I think most importantly is if there's nothing about the design that gets you excited as the designer,
right,
then maybe it's time to move on to something else.
Right. And at least, you know, like I said, you don't have to throw it away, but at least just set it down and say, let's see if this ever comes back up again, you know?
Right. Because we know as designers, not publishers, that we're in this for the love of the project and the love of the challenge, not for the money. Right. So if you're doing that, and you're making a game that you're not enjoying and that you wouldn't look forward to playing, then you shouldn't be working on that game. That's my opinion anyway.
I agree.
Yeah.
Unless somebody's already going to publish that game and then you work on it anyways. You agreed. So,
well, when you sign a contract, that all changes. Right. Yeah.
So, all right. I'm going to pitch a game now.
Do it.
I'm going to pitch a game I've been referencing this whole time.
Great.
Right now,
I'm so surprised. I didn't know that.
Right now, the game is called the Cube Grid Game.
That's a spectacular name, Jason.
Isn't it though, right?
Yeah.
I think you said today when I said that, you said, that sounds like the type of name that I would come up with.
Yep, sure does.
the reason it doesn't have a name is because it doesn't have an actual theme yet, and that is a problem, but hey, it's all right.
Theme agnostic.
Yeah. It's a themeist. Theme atheist. It does not believe in theme.
Yep, go on.
There's no need for
theme.
Keep
going.
I can't think of any other
one. It has a lack of belief.
Yes, in themes.
In themes.
So, or in its own theme. It's really the nihilist of games is what it is.
Okay.
This game believes in nothing.
Okay. Yeah.
Except for the rules of its own game.
Yeah.
So anyways, all right. So here's how the game works. The game is a 6x6 board, which is squares, right? 6x6 squares. Each four squares, like in the, for instance, is a quadrant, right? So it's a 3x3 quadrant. Yeah, so there's nine quadrants in the game. 36 right. squares, nine quadrants. And then the corner of each corner of the board, so four of them, has a symbol on it that's a circle that right now stands for teleporting.
Mm-hmm.
If there was a theme attached, I'm sure it would be some sweet theme thing.
It should be moles, and those are the mole holes.
It did occur to me that was a thought, but I don't really like moles. They creep me out a little.
Prairie dogs.
Call the game Prairie Doggin'.
And they're trying to control their. Well, I'm sorry, you haven't gotten to the goal of it, but they could be controlling the hill, you know, controlling the prairie.
They could be.
That's actually a pretty good idea.
It's all right.
Yeah, dogs are cute too. Have you seen prairie dogs?
Can I call it Prairie Doggin', or does that have a bad connotation?
You can call it that for now.
Lumberjacking. So, anyways. The game. So what happens in the game is there's also a deck of 18 cards. The 18 cards have numbers on them. The numbers are 2 through 6. Actually, right now it's 16 cards, but it's 2 through 6. Four of each number, except for sixes and twos. There are two sixes. There are two twos. You always have three cards in your hand. And the idea on your turn is you will play a card, and then you have a cube that starts in. You start in opposite corners, and then you move the number of squares that you set, right? Now, squares, as in spaces, not quadrants, right? So whenever your cube enters a new quadrant, you deposit a cube there. Okay? Follow me so far? I know you do because you play the game, but you can never go backwards on a turn. You can't go to a square you've already been on, and you can't enter a quadrant that you've already been in.
Once you leave a quadrant, you cannot return to that quadrant.
Yes.
Yeah.
What you said. Okay. So that's how that works, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty sweet.
And movement is
orthogonal and diagonal.
Right.
Yes. Always just full on adjacent. So moving diagonal a lot of times is your best move, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a couple more rules. You can never go on a square that has your opponent's either piece or your opponent's cubes that they've left over, right? The tokens they're leaving on the board.
Your opponent has previously claimed.
Yeah. You can go back over yours, right? So you move around. Now, the game ends when, I'll get more specifics right now. The game ends when either the board is full or a person cannot make a legal move on their turn. And you always must move your full move if possible. If you can't, you can stop. But if you can't move any spaces, then the game ends. Also, if the last card is played, the game ends as well. Okay?
Okay.
Okay, so some special rules. There are four colors to the squares, right? Or in this case, we use the symbols in the card decks, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the spades, four suits, yeah. Spades, clubs, diamonds, and hearts. And those are spread out pretty well. When I play, for instance, a four of hearts, I get to move four. And that means on your turn that you can't, if you move on hearts, it's going to cost you double, right?
It's going to cost me 2 points to move into that heart square instead of one.
And I actually, after today, I almost wonder if it would be better if it just, you can't go on hearts if I do that.
Well, that was the original thought, and then you scaled it back to double movement points.
But I think next time I try it, I may try it as just full on blocked.
Yeah, it's worth trying.
I think that
absolutely
would be okay.
Yeah.
Okay. The sixes, however, because six is such a powerful card, being able to move a six is very powerful, means that it doesn't block your opponent's anything because that your advantage is moving six. And the twos, because they kind of stink otherwise. So a two of hearts, remember there's two twos. There's a black two and a red two. Mm-hmm. The red two blocks anything red. The black two blocks anything black, right?
Yep.
And yeah, you move around the board playing those cards to stop people and trying to get as much control of the board as possible. End of game scoring is really simple.
Mm-hmm.
You get 1 point for every quadrant you control, meaning you have more cubes in that quadrant. And if your piece is left in a quadrant, we changed this today, that counts as that extra, like, hey, that's an extra cube in this quadrant.
Tiebreaker kind
even of if it's sitting on top of one.
Yeah.
The other thing is if you have a quadrant and your opponent has zero pieces in it, you get 2 points for it, right? So today we played a game, you won 6-4. And then if there's a tie, the ultimate tiebreaker is just count up the number of cubes, play with the most cubes wins. If that ties, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. Like,
play again.
Just play again.
But it plays fast.
It does play fast. So that's the whole game. It's not complicated at all. The thought processes that are make the game fun, I think, are the movements and then trying to screw up your opponent's movement. And I think maybe a blocking, like being able to say, you can't go here, makes that better.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting choice. Yeah.
Why not, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so I think that's a good idea. You'd want to make sure you look at your game board to make sure that like none of the teleport squares are completely blocked in by black or red. If
yes,
you do that,
good point.
You'd want to make sure of that.
They shouldn't be.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember
in fact,
what it
it's
looked
not
like
possible there. For them to be. Because there's in that opening square, there's always all four colors.
It's oh,
always
there, okay.
To be. So
okay,
yeah, that
good.
Way, there are always all
fine.
Four suits.
So yeah, good. So some suggestions that I made to help scoring is you could give bonuses for straight lines.
Yep.
So if you can get like five cubes in a row, you might be able to get an extra point or something for that. And you, maybe each person has a secret target quadrant. You know, the quadrants are named 1 through 9. And if you can claim all four squares in your target quadrant that's identified at the start of the game, then you get extra point for that or something.
Right.
You know, so those might be some options for other decision making or other strategy.
Yep. And if I did that, I would make it a 36 card game.
Yeah.
Which would be fine. There's enough tokens in the game that are required that having some extra cards isn't going to affect the cost at all.
Yeah.
I likely would be chipboard tokens. And so here's kind of a cool way that I thought, because I thought this could be a 4-player game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why not, right? So if it was a 4-player game, you would only be affected by the last card that was played, first of all, because that otherwise it'd be stupid, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you're actually blocking. Like, you can move on one suit.
Mm-hmm.
With the 4-player game, each player starts in their own corners. What was I thinking that changes? Play the cards the same. Trying to go over the quadrants. Well, scoring would be very low, right, in a 4-player game.
It would go real fast.
But here's what I thought. So in the game, there are you each start with 20 cubes plus your kind of your cube. That's the like in the game. I think it might still be a cube, right, or a meeple or something. It represents you, and then you have your tokens you leave behind. So a cool graphic design thing that could be done if I was a publisher was you have 40 tokens, right?
Mm-hmm.
10 of them on one side are player one. 10 of them on the other side are player two, and then, you know, 20 HR, sorry, 20 are player one, 20 are player two, but if you flip them over, now it's four different symbols, and there's 10 of each, right?
Sure.
So, like, boom.
Yeah, you can
that'd
do that.
Be pretty cool.
Yeah.
So,
what if you turned it into a hex grid and maybe expanded the size a little bit, and then you could make it up to a 6-player game?
The only thing I don't like about that is I feel like the hexes add too many options for movement.
Okay.
I think it makes movement too easy. That's my opinion, is movement's really easy on hexes.
Okay.
It would be really hard to block someone. And I like the idea with this whole blocking mechanism of the cards
it's
that
true.
You might actually end the game by just making it so someone can't move.
Yeah.
Because that hasn't happened yet when we've played, and I would love to see that happen.
Yeah. I guess that, okay. That's a good point.
So.
Okay.
But yeah. It's an option. Certainly yeah. an option. So,
boy, yeah, making a four-player game would
be very tight.
It'd be real tight.
Yeah. Alternatively, if a publisher was so inclined, you could have dual-sided board, and the other side of the board could be like a 7x7 grid.
Or 8x8.
Eight by eight. Actually, you'd have to get an even number. So 8x8. And then it might work great for a four-player game. Mm-hmm. You just need more tokens, which would be fine. You know, everybody has 15 tokens of player 3 and player 4. That would be plenty to use. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So I'm going to keep messing with it. I'll have it at GrandCon with me. I don't plan on putting a ton of time into it because I've got some other stuff I'm working on still, but including another game I'm going to pitch next time I'm it's up for me, which we haven't play tested yet. We're going to play test this week is the plan. So,
okay.
And that's my other game. I was going to say what it's about, but I'm not going to.
Okay.
So, yeah. Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. So do we have any emails or Twitter questions?
Senior Into Bob says... Hey, guys. Sorry, I was trying to keep my phone away. I'm not sure what made me think of this recently, but I had an idea for Rob's game about eating food at the fair.
Oh, yeah, fair food.
From way back early episodes of the podcast.
Yeah.
Basically, this was when Rob was making lots of games that were gross. basically, there would be ribbon tokens, which fits the fair theme, for eating the most foods in different categories, such as foods on a stick. Fried foods, dessert foods, exotic foods, etc. The twist is that foods can be used towards different ribbons because they fulfill multiple conditions. I'm not sure if this is something you'd want to pursue, but I thought I would share. Also, watching the Iron Design contest at Gen Con was pretty fun. Cheers, Robert, a.k.a. Senior Bob.
All right, cool. Yeah, man, fair food. You know, I still think about that game now and then and think about how much fun it would be because...
The ribbons thing would be actually pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's a great idea. It's a really good idea.
Ribbon card sitting up there and you're an exotic food might also be fried. Food on a stick might also be fried, you know?
Maybe I should go back to that design thing. I should listen back to that episode.
You should. That'd be fun.
Think about it. Maybe do a repitch.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Yeah.
Huh.
That'd be fun to do at some point. Go back and...
Like a first game that we ever pitched? Or like one of the first five or something?
Yeah, one of the first five.
Yeah. Yeah.
Listen to it and then go back and then say, all right, I listened to this. I'd be fine with that. Yeah, yeah.
We should do that sometime.
Yeah, that'd be fun. First game I pitched was a zombie game.
It was, yeah.
It actually, I still feel like has unique rules that are valid.
It's been a while. I don't remember it.
But the unique rules only work if it's a zombie game, and I don't want to make a zombie game. So.
Yeah. What was the first one that I did? I think it was a Carcassonne ripoff, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Was it that Impulse one where you had to put the...
Wormholes.
That's what it was. Impulse. No, that's that game I don't like. I'm sorry to whoever designed that. I'm sure that smarter people than me... Yeah, T.C. Petty thinks that game is amazing or something.
I don't know.
Somebody does. I don't. I'm not good at it. I don't understand what's happening. There are spaceships.
Well, that's enough for me. Spaceships
are
cool. All
right. So, hey, so that's us tonight.
Hey, so can people rate our podcast on Stitcher?
Presumably. Hey, rate our podcast on Stitcher.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
That'd be great.
Yeah. All right, well, I'll go through all that stuff then.
Okay.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. We appreciate it. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @podcastbtg. Jason is @JASlingerlin, and I'm @poorly_designed. You can like us on Facebook. You can give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and you can give us whatever the highest possible score is on Stitcher as well. We like that.
Probably
5 stars 1, or 10 out of 10 or...
4,000 out of 4,000.
42.
Yes. If I had a radio station online, that would be the top rating is 42.
42. You can call our Google Voice number at 770-TEL-BTG. Don't forget to enter the Grand Con contest. #BTGGrand on Twitter. Tweet a picture of yourself packed and ready to go to Grand Con. The winner will get 2 free badges and 2 free t-shirts. You want to enter that contest. Grand Con is awesome. I feel like I've forgotten stuff, but I don't care.
You always do.
Good night.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
Which apparently is happening soon.
Soon.
Yeah.
In the cosmic sense of the word.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.